Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehrer today. When a new mayor takes office, so do new agency heads across the city's various departments. Mayor de Blasio is still in the process of getting his team in place, but as commissioner of the Administration for Children's Services has been on the job since the very start of the term. Gladys Carrione comes to ACS after a long career in children's services at the state level, in the nonprofit sector, and before that, she worked in the Dinkins administration, where she worked alongside now Mayor de Blasio. Now she's charged with protecting the children of our city. There's perhaps no other agency where the stakes for performance are higher. There was a tragic reminder of that just a week into Gladys Carrione's tenure when 4-year-old Miles Dobson died in Manhattan after weeks of abuse. Administration for Children's Services Commissioner Gladys Carrione joins us now to talk about her priorities for the city's child welfare agency. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you.
So let's start with the story of Miles Dobson. When you were appointed just days before Christmas, you said a major priority would be tightening the system so no child falls through the cracks. A week into your tenure, a child died, a 4-year-old in Manhattan. He'd been previously removed from his mother by ACS. His father got custody. Then his father was arrested. The child was with the father's girlfriend, who allegedly abused him for weeks, and the child died after 3 weeks. What broke down in this case?
You know, I think there's a realization that we could do better as an agency. You know, as we review and we investigate, we keep learning new things. Certainly, we learn that we need to have better communications among the city agencies. And certainly, the Dobson case, we found that we needed to have better communication with the police department, have better access to databases to be able to get information on arrests, for instance. And I think that as a result of taking a deep dive in what happened in that case, certainly there were opportunities there to be able to intervene. And so I think we have to do a better job of making sure that we're aware of those opportunities, where we could improve our practice, and where we can go in and make sure that children are safe. And so one of the recommendations that the mayor has embraced is to create a children's cabinet, which is a really interagency group that will help to leverage each other's resources, to be able to enhance communication between agencies and set protocols to be able to access information. And really the realization that it's just not ACS's responsibility to keep children safe, but every city agency that touches the life of children and families really needs to work better together, collaboratively, to make that happen.
So better communication, you say, because as I understand it, the case was closed. The ACS case was closed in this case. And then when the arrest of the father happened, there was no awareness that the child needed to be looked after. Is that correct?
Well, the case wasn't closed at that time, and we were actively visiting the child, and the father was not home. We were interfacing with the child care provider, who was a different person, who had been cleared by us, who was providing care for the child. There was never an SCR called or any allegation.
SCR.
Our state central registry where calls for abuse and neglect come in. So there was never any indication that the child was at risk, and we were seeing the child, but we were not communicating with the father. And, you know, we were told each time we went, he's at work, he's at work. And so that was a pretty good reason why he wasn't available. But we didn't look beyond that. We didn't insist on seeing that father. And so after 5 and 6 visits that we made and we didn't see the father, we should have questioned that and where was the father. But I think that the focus was on the child. The child was doing well. The babysitter, the caregiver, the girlfriend at that point, was providing good care. We didn't hear from any other family member. So we just weren't alert to that. But I think that we should have been. And we should have been asking questions about where is the father. We should have called his job. There are lots of things in hindsight that we look at the case that we think we could have done differently. And that maybe as a result of that, we would have made different decisions if we had that information.
Miles Dobson is a name that we know because the system did not protect him. But give me a sense of the agency's overall work, of the many children whose names we never learn because the system works. How many children are you monitoring? What's the scope of this in New York City?
You know, it's a very large number of children. There are over 55,000 calls that come into the state's hotline for New York City cases. You know, in Brooklyn alone, these court-ordered supervision cases is over 1,300 cases. And in fact, we're going to be reviewing each of those cases. And in fact, the total, when we look at it's huge. It's over 4,000 citywide. And so we're going to be looking at every case in Brooklyn to see what we can learn. You know, we've done a safety check. We're going out to visit all of our children, all of our families to make sure that they're safe. But we're going to take a deep dive and look into those cases. The scope is huge. It really is. And so it's a big job that we have. And I think that we do a good job, but we also always can do better.
I want to ask you about Marcella Pierce, a child who died in 2010 while under the agency's watch. At the time, there was a lot of attention about caseworkers' caseloads and the capacity of caseworkers to adequately monitor children who were under their care. What's changed since then in terms of the workloads of caseworkers?
Well, I think a lot has changed. We've learned a lot. We've implemented. Caseloads are low. They've gone down substantially. But I think that we probably need to look more closely as to whether or not we've reached the right level of cases per worker, and also whether or not we have the sufficient supervisory level that we need. But I think that what we see, and as I meet with staff and talk to staff, is very complicated cases. For instance, deep involvement with domestic violence issues. Very large sibling groups, for instance, domestic violence. So maybe, given how difficult and complex these cases may be, that maybe our caseload even have to be lower. And maybe we need to have specialized units where staff with special expertise in knowing how to work with parents that present some very difficult issues might be a way to go, which is what we're exploring now. So there was enhanced training, more training, really policy changes. So a lot has been done as a result of that case. But with each case, we learn something new and how to improve our practice.
Listeners, the new commissioner of the city's Administration for Children's Services is here with us. What are your questions for her about the city's role in protecting children? What do you wish the city could do more of? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So we've talked a lot to start about the administration of your agency, but I want to know a little bit more about you. You grew up in the South Bronx. You went to Fordham and then NYU Law School, and then directly into Bronx Legal Services. What pulled you into this kind of work when you were just out of law school?
Well, you know, I was very clear when I went to law school that I wanted to work in my community, that I wanted to do public interest law. You know, I grew up in the South Bronx. My parents came from Puerto Rico, you know, looking for a better life for their two children. And, you know, there was always a commitment, I think a realization on my part, that I really wanted to improve the chances for my community, you know, to improve their well-being as a community and to give back. I certainly, you know, my parents stressed education, and certainly I was very privileged to be able to get a first-class education. You know, my father had a third-grade education, and my mother was a high school graduate, so I was the first in my family to go to college, the first to go to law school. I have a nephew now in law school, but till the other day, I could say I was probably the only one that was ever going to go to law school, right?
Congratulations to your nephew.
So I think that's great. So I always was very clear that I wanted to go back, that I wanted to go back work in the community. And so Bronx Legal Services for me was a very logical choice. I actually lived in the community that I served as a young attorney, you know, saw firsthand what the needs of my community was and wanted to be able to be in a position to make a difference.
One of the interesting things about your career is the way you've moved in between the public and private sectors. You worked for a number of nonprofits, Bronx Legal Services among them, the United Way, Inwood House, an organization that serves pregnant and parenting teens. So I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about when you were outside the public sector, when you were working as an advocate, what were the things that you looked at the system and just felt absolutely frustrated by?
I'm still frustrated.
That doesn't change when you enter the public sector.
It doesn't change, right? And so, you know, I always view myself as an advocate and as advocate for children and families. And so I think as a practitioner, sometimes you question, these rules don't make sense. They don't help me do my job. You know, are we listening to the voice of parents? You know, do we understand how they experience what we're doing? You know, are we effectively engaging them? Are we providing them with the services, supports that they need? And so that was always very frustrating, you know, and always frustrating because many of the families that I was working with and children and young people, you know, the issue of poverty was really an overarching concern that many of them are involved in our systems because they're poor. And so, you know, always questioning, how do we improve their ability to get jobs? You know, how do we improve our schools so they're prepared better to be able to access jobs in higher education? So it's really, you know, it's frustrating when you're doing this work, when you feel that the systems are not responding the way they could respond. So I think it's my job in being inside government to make our systems more responsive.
Ken in the Bronx has a question for you about how you measure that. Ken, what's your question for the commissioner?
Yes, I don't know very much about this particular agency. In fact, I've just heard of it now. But if I were to take, say, two or three numbers or statistics today and then measure them in 4 or 5 years, what numbers should change that would tell me that you've done a good job? What would you consider a success?
Good question, Ken.
What numbers should we be watching?
So, you know, for me, it's a real shift, Ken. I really want to focus on child well-being. I want to be able to say that the children that are in my system are doing well in school. You know, they can read, they're graduating from high school, they're job ready if that's what they want. They can go to college and not only go to college but graduate, that they can enter and maintain healthy relationships. That's what we should be focusing on. You know, for me, it's not enough to say that we've reduced the number of children in out-of-home care. That's important, and that we've kept children safe. That's important. But we need to do more, and we need to make sure that the young people, that the children and young people in my system have options, and that we're doing a good job of helping to raise them, because that's what I'm doing when they're in my system. So it's what I want for my own children. I want for children that are in my system.
Barbara in South Orange, New Jersey has a question about who raises the kids. What's your question about parenting in ACS, Barbara? Hi, you there, Barbara?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead with your question.
My question is, what type of program are you instituting for fathers who want to be an integral part in their children's lives, but there seems to be some confrontational problem between the mother and the father, where she uses the child as a way of distancing that relationship? And if the father is in a position to give the love and the care, but he's not financially able to do so, what is instituted in any of these programs to make that possible?
You know, I think you raise a really good point about how we have to do much more to engage parents in the life of their children. When I was at Inwood House, for instance, we actually had a young father's program. And one of the really important aspects, and it's something that you touch on, is really helping them, the mother of the child and the father of the child, when they're no longer in a relationship, to understand how they need to have a relationship that's healthy to really help that child. That's important where possible for a child to have two parents involved in their lives and for them to put their differences aside and to work on creating a healthy relationship in order to really raise their child together. And helping the young mother, many, many instances, understand what that means, and helping the young father understand what that means. So when I was at Inwood House, we did a lot of work on that, And I would love to be able to bring some of that knowledge to ACS. And there are programs out in the community that do that. But as a system, I think we need to do more.
We got a tweet from a listener who says, prevention services don't seem to receive the same support as foster care. Why and what can we do to garner more?
Well, you know, we've done a huge investment in preventive services.
And what does preventative services mean in the case of taking care of kids?
Well, it really is looking at the types of supports that families need, whether it's parenting classes, whether it's counseling, whether it's substance abuse, just the myriad of services supports, whether it's getting housing, whatever a family would need in order to be able to maintain their child in their home safely and help increase their capacity to be better parents. And so I think that we've done a real big investment in preventive services. We have over 27,000 families now receiving preventive services, and we've initiated what we're calling evidence-based models in our preventive services programs, really to give more sophisticated tools to our agencies who provide the services. And these are programs that have been evaluated and assessed that are interventions that make a difference, that work with certain populations. But I think that you're right, and I think that the mayor, and when he announced my appointment, really spoke about the need to invest even more in prevention. I think that we need to make sure that we have the right programs, that it's individualized for families, that we help families engage in actually accessing those services and supports, that we help them along that process, and that we're intervening in the right way, providing the right set of services, and almost, you know, the right dosage of services that will help families.
Peter in the Bronx has a question about those interventions. Peter, what's your question for the commissioner?
Yes, hi. I was a psychologist in two foster care agencies for about 24 years. And frankly, I like what I'm hearing today from you on the radio. In the past, there's often been, when there's a tragic death of a child that's at home, there's been a tendency to start yanking kids out of their families, putting them into foster care, which various research studies have shown actually do more damage than keeping the kid at home unless it's a very severe, life-threatening situation. But it sounds like your emphasis really is on helping families manage difficult social, economic, emotional issues. And I hope it continues that way rather than we must take everybody out where there's some danger and 1,000 kids get harmed for the 3 kids that get saved.
Thanks for your call, Peter. Commissioner, tell me how you walk that balance between protecting a child who may be in a risky situation with wanting to support the whole family. How do you talk about that?
You know, those are very difficult decisions to be made because no one wants a child to die. And so, but, you know, our staff is trained to make those safety assessments and to make sure that once we deem that a child is safe, then it's really about how can we help you? And I think one of the challenges for me as the new commissioner is really to create a helping organization that we're perceived in the community as an agency that you can go for help. You know, we started at the state level in New York City as a pilot of what we call differential response, family assessment response, which is a track where once we assess that the child is safe, then it's really about not indicating, not finding fault with the family, but really asking them, what do you need? How can we help you? You know, you're having some challenges. We can see that. They don't rise to the level of taking your child away. And if it did, then we have a responsibility to do that. But it doesn't. And in many, many cases, it doesn't. So how do we provide you with the services you need? Talk to us. Tell us what you need instead of us always dictating what you need. And together, kind of weaving together the sets of supports that you need. That's very important. But, you know, it's our responsibility to keep children safe. And we have to understand what that means and be able to assess the family dynamic and understand what's happening in that household. But in many, many, many of our cases, our families need support.
I want to ask you about your work with the state, because prior to coming back to the city, you headed the State Office of Children and Family Services under Governors Eliot Spitzer, Andrew Cuomo, and David Paterson. That office oversees foster care and child protection, as well as juvenile detention facilities. And under your leadership, there was a change in the management of how juvenile offenders, where they went, whether they went to upstate detention facilities or whether they stayed in the community. Can you tell us a little bit about that work and the politics behind that? Was, you know, there were some interests who wanted to keep jobs upstate where the juveniles were housed. You closed detention facilities.
I closed 21 facilities during my tenure, and I'm very proud of that work. And we transformed the juvenile justice system in the state of New York with the support of the three governors that I had the privilege of serving. And actually, under my tenure, we instituted Close to Home, where New York City now has responsibility for its juvenile delinquents. So I found a system that was very punitive and correctional in nature, a very large system. We were sending primarily young people from New York City to upstate facilities very, very far from their home. And so we did a lot of work to narrow that front door to keep as many young people in the community that were low-level, nonviolent misdemeanors that really should have not been incarcerated in my system. We really invested in diversion programs, both diverting young people from coming into the system and diverting people from coming into placement in the state. There were challenges because I think that in many communities upstate, they had stepped up many, many years ago and said, yes, you can have a facility in my community, when other communities didn't want these children in their backyard. But we realized that we really didn't need these facilities. They were too large. They were not therapeutic in nature, housing many young people that didn't belong there. And it was a struggle because these communities were losing jobs. And so it was very clear under each of these governors that this was not about jobs. It was about young people and doing what was right for young people. And you know what Governor Cuomo did, much to his credit, was actually create an economic development fund for those counties that were adversely impacted by my closures to allow them to have access to dollars to be able to create other job opportunities. And so a community in Fulton County, for instance, where I call those Tryon, one of the most notorious facilities in the state, also a very big facility, they now have converted that, are moving to convert into an industrial park. So, you know, it's been a win-win situation. So we, in the state, we have a much, much smaller system. You know, when I came in, we had close to 2,000 young people in our system. Probably today's census is probably about 450 young people in state custody now.
Huh. And one final question about money. I'm going to put you on the spot. Mayor de Blasio is introducing his first proposed budget today. What did you tell him you needed for ACS?
Well, I certainly went in and advocated on behalf of my agency and the fact that we need more resources. We need to look at reducing caseload even further, really reducing the load for supervisors, looking at maybe some reorganization. But I really understand the challenges that the mayor has. You know, certainly he has to renegotiate, you know, all these labor contracts. And so I don't think we have much money. So I'm hoping that at some point I will have additional resources, but I'm certainly used to doing more with less.
Gladys Carrione is the new commissioner of the Administration for Children's Services in New York City. Thanks so much for joining us, Commissioner.
Thank you.